Hello, and welcome back to the Virtual Coffee Podcast. I'm Becca, and this is a podcast that features members of the Virtual Coffee community. Virtual Coffee is an intimate group of developers at all stages of their coding journey, and they're here on this podcast sharing their stories and what they've learned. Here with me today is my co-host, Dan.
Hey, Becca. I am pretty excited to be here for season two. Last season was really great. We had, how many episodes do we have?
Nine
amazing episodes. And I don't know, we had some really great guests. I thought we had a good rhythm, and I'm pretty pumped to be back for season two. We have a very good lineup again for this next season.
And not only is it season two of the podcast, but it's also, we're also moving into the second year of Virtual Coffee, which is pretty sweet as well.
Pretty cool.
What started as one tweet suddenly turned into a community of developers, and we have had two sessions of lightning talks, over 100 virtual coffees, Hacktoberfest, brown bags, book clubs, this podcast, and a lot more. So it's been pretty great.
Newsletter.
And a newsletter.
If you would like to join Virtual Coffee, if you're not a member already, the way to join is to come to one of our coffee events. So we have coffees right now. We have coffees Tuesday mornings at 9 a.m. Eastern and Thursday afternoons at noon Eastern. So coming to one of our coffee Zooms is the way to join the group. You can get links to those if you go to our website, virtualcoffee.io. And I think go to the events section, something like that, and come and hang out.
In this season, we're talking about some new topics, and we'll be talking about starting your journey, making hard decisions, asking for help, and finding your voice. So we're really excited to be sharing these episodes with you.
Kicking off season two, our first episode, we have Gant Laborde. Gant Laborde is an owner of Infinite Red. He's a mentor, an adjunct professor, a published author, and award-winning speaker. For 20 years, he has been involved in software development and continues strong today. He is recognized as a Google developer expert in web and machine learning, but informally, he is an open sorcerer and aspires to one day become a mad scientist. I feel like Gant's already there. This is from Gant's bio that he gave us, but I feel like he doesn't need to aspire anymore. Gant is our local mad scientist.
Can confirm.
He blogs, videos, and maintains popular repositories for the community. He also just released his new book, Learning TensorFlow.js, Powerful Machine Learning in JavaScript. It's an O'Reilly book. It's available now. You can follow more of Gant's adventures at GantLaborde.com. In this episode, we're going to talk to Gant about overcoming challenges, being authentic, and finding your voice.
We start every episode of the podcast like we start every virtual coffee. So we'll introduce ourselves with our name, where we're from, what we do, and a random check-in question. So today's random check-in question is, the zombie apocalypse is coming. Who are three people you want on your team? We hope you enjoy this episode. Hey, I'm Becca. I am from a small town in Ohio. I am a front-end developer. And if I could bring three people with me in the zombie apocalypse, I would bring Marianne Ravenwood from Indiana Jones. I would bring the dog from The Sandlot, even though that's not a person. Or maybe I should bring Betty the Jet Rodriguez. He would be good. And my six-year-old has decided to be called Fireblade now, and that just sounds like it could be cool for the zombie apocalypse, so I'll bring him too.
Hi, I'm Dan, a front-end developer from Lakewood, Ohio, and if I had to choose three people, I feel like I really feel like we need to get some powers going. You know, I was trying to pick some. I almost said Dumbledore, but like he's too much of a risk. He's can't run, like he's too slow, you know, he's so old. maybe like later on Harry, well probably Hermione, honestly, you know, we need some magic, you know, whoever is faster of the two of them. And then probably I don't know, Hulk maybe. you know, unpredictable, might ruin our defenses. And yeah, I need a dog too. I don't know. I'd have to get in my whole power ranking of dogs too. So it's a whole big thing, but you know, some kind of friendly companion. And well, that's three. Yeah, that's it.
Hey, I'm Gant Laborde, and in
the great zombie apocalypse,
I would I guess, like, I'm supposed to say here my co-host, like the people here on this podcast, but I'm sorry, y'all are dead.
We didn't say you either.
It would be my daughter and my partner, so Alicia and Mila, my dogs, but they don't count as people. And then I get one more person who gets to go with me. So I guess I'd take Dwayne The Rock Johnson, because if I can't figure it out, I know he can.
I like it.
Nice. I suddenly feel bad about not taking my family from one of them.
I mean,
you've got Fireblade, so.
I do. I've got Fireblade. The one who's going to get us to where we need to be. So welcome to the podcast, Gant. We're really, really happy to have you here. I want to start off with asking a question. What is one non-coding thing our listeners might not know about you?
So I always hate these questions because they make me realize just how boring I really am. I'll say this. I feel like public speaking is a cool thing, but I do public speaking about coding. I'd say like building stuff, but most of the stuff I build, I code, like IoT stuff. So, I'll go with the fact that I used to be terrible at gardening before the pandemic. I killed artificial plants. That's how bad I was. And now I had a sandwich yesterday. The lettuce was from the plant right here next to my monitor, and the spuds were from the sprouts were from my windowsill, and I'm working on some jalapenos in the backyard to go ahead and make my own pepper jelly to mix in with that sandwich. So truth be told, awesome. You can teach an old dog new tricks.
Nice. That is amazing. I want some pepper jelly now.
On a sandwich, it's good, actually. I don't know if you've tried that.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
No, pepper jelly, sprouts, and lettuce sandwich. Woo! That's good.
Sounds delicious. I'm ready for one now. So you let me know when that pepper jelly is done.
All right.
Let's talk a little bit about your origin story, how you came to be Gant Laborde.
That's a little bit boring as well. So like everybody's got these really cool stories about how, you know, I was an accountant or a teacher for 17 years. And then one day I decided, forget this. I'm going to do some kind of like workshop or something. I'm going to change my life and my career. My family hated computers. My family is like very anti-computer, anti-technology, not on purpose. They're just, for some reason, my dad kind of kept it out of the house. And I had a Nintendo, and I wasn't allowed to hook it up to any TV that was worth anything because it would cause ghosts or something he heard, whatever. Ghosts, not like real ghosts. Back when you had CRTs, you could actually cause like images to get burned into the phosphorus, so it would cause issues. So I loved that thing, and then finally he had to get a work computer that shows up, and then I make that computer say hello Gant. It was Windows 3.1. I do some QBasic on it, make it say hello Gant, and I was like, okay, this is what I'm doing with my life. So I self-taught myself how to program in high school. I went to college for computer programming. I graduated. I've just been in this field for so long. It wasn't like there was like this weird, cool hero's arc to get there. it really was that once my computer was able to play games and do these cool things, I said, I'm going to do that. And I'm going to be the person in my family who does that. I guess I could sprinkle in here. I did have a lot of like computer programmers, anxiety, lack of support in a few ways. Like, you know, I didn't have anybody to ask. I had the oldest computer in high school. I didn't have any money. So I guess I've self-made myself into this profession. That's probably as interesting as I get.
Well, I mean, I think that's great because you can make anything interesting. You are a storyteller, I think, and you'll find a way to make it interesting. And I think that was great.
Thank you.
To, like, kind of going off of that. So you are basically a master of all trades, right? Like you do all of these things. You speak, you write, you code, you mentor. You're like my Yoda figure. So when I have a problem, you just ask the right questions and then I hopefully come to the right answers. So what is your favorite thing to do?
I found that it really depends on my state of mind. I need to be creative, though. I need to let creativity flow through me. And sometimes it's writing. Writing is very cathartic. If you've, you know, went through high school and used to get B's in English and you kind of enjoyed it, I feel like you could be bringing a whole value to the whole world of computers and documentation and storytelling and helping and giving narrative. It really misses a lot of that. You know, it's so calculated that sort of, I want to say that algorithmic sort of, you should have known this, is cold. And it could use a lot of kindness and stories and interest and examples and fun things to kind of bring in there, like zombie apocalypses. I would love to learn via zombie apocalypse as a course. Actually, there used to be this Rails course, Rails for Zombies, right? And it did fantastic. Where's the new version of that?
Yeah.
So my thing is bring the creativity through you. You know, like write the blog posts, write the stories, create a game that helps educate, create podcasts like this. And so I find that I tend to center myself around other creatives who, despite you might be fantastic at one thing or another, or maybe your video editing skills are just like off the charts, maybe you can make a TikTok that everybody's like, how'd you do that? Whatever it is, bring it together and use it to tell a story.
Yeah, I love that. I had totally forgotten about it, but I did crypto zombies a couple of years ago, and that was really fun. So it was programming with Ethereum, and you were going through and defeating these zombies, I think.
Yeah, there's a CSS Flexbox course that's all like a zombie. You have to like solve a bunch of zombie-related puzzles to like learn CSS.
I guess you got to like get down in the alleyway using Flexbox without touching the zombies or something. That'd be funny.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Now we need a collection of all of the zombie coding lessons that are out there.
Yes.
I like it.
So speaking of zombies and challenges, what are some of the challenges that you've gone through in this journey? I think, you know, you come off as someone that can do a lot of things really, really well. But I know that we all go through something. And so I especially love to hear from people who do things so effortlessly, you know, what they had to do to get to that point.
There's a couple. This is a choose your own adventure. There's trying to graduate was really hard for me because I was a D student in math. I wasn't very good at math. I didn't see how it actually pertained with anything. And that was really hard for a while. Now I actually watch math YouTube videos for fun. So that's a different version of me. the other thing I'll say is that I used to be afraid of crowds or speaking at all. At all. I had a college, you know, 101 psychology, philosophy. And I did everything wrong. Like, I'm getting ready to go ahead and do this, right? I have no money. I'm in college, first year. I decide, you know what I'm going to do? I'm really nervous about this. I'm going to treat myself to a really nice latte. I'll feel very happy because I've got this latte. I'm just going to put myself in the corner up until it's time for me to go ahead and give my talk. And so I drank my latte. I sat in the corner. I just kind of like crowded over myself, sitting over my notes, reading, and, you know, like the first sentence, almost like I couldn't help myself. I was just consistently rereading the whole thing. Get up there. You're just super ready to go ahead and give this presentation. First sentence comes out of my mouth. Boom. There you go. Take that, everybody. What's the second sentence? Gant. What's the second sentence? Gant. Did you memorize the second sentence? All right, now it's quiet. Forget the second sentence. You're completely quiet. Everybody's looking at you. Come up with something that's better than the second sentence right now with everybody watching. Do something that's going to be fantastic and blow everybody away. It is. Okay, you're still quiet and everybody's still looking at you. You just need to say the second sentence that's really good now. No pressure. It better be the best second sentence you've ever said in your life. Someone's coming over to you. They're moving you to the side of the room. They're continuing this talk without you. You still haven't said anything. That's what happened to me in college. And that's where I was. And everything I did to prepare for that was wrong. Everything I did was wrong. And from that day to where I am now, that's another adventure. So, yeah, I could talk about either of those things. Your choice.
Well, just listening to you describe that, I'm like sweating now. Just listening, like
you know it. You know, that, hey, you know what? You know, you're not hyper tuned into one person in the audience. You are reading the minds of about 30 people watching you, and you're like, I think I saw somebody roll their eyes, you know, in the third row. You know, like I was super tuned into all the wrong things. So name some of the things I did wrong there. One, I took, I had coffee right before I was going to give a talk, which I was nervous about. What? I was crowded over myself. I had body language. I know that there's a lot of argument about power posing being false or whatever. I think that even if it's not specifically tied to testosterone or if they can't have, they're having trouble proving that part of it, I don't care. How you're positioning yourself right before a talk helps create, you know, how you're going to be during it. I was trying to memorize. I was rereading the same thing. I tried to come up with something right on the spot instead of understanding how to go ahead and present a story. I was presenting exactly what I was trying to say. It was, I was trying to be perfect. And so all those things were totally wrong. And it created a super fear existing human being, putting me in a crowd any more than like a small circle of people. And I would start getting extremely uncomfortable. Now I've emceed conferences online and in person with over thousands of people. So it's a big change. But that was a bunch of steps between here and there. I do have a blog post about that, too. I can share that at some point.
Oh, yeah. Well,
for sure. So, we need to drop that in the show notes.
Yeah, we definitely will. Yeah. I mean, that's very like this, that whole that door is the one I choose. Sorry, Becca. I'm picking the door. But like, what were some like, I mean, obviously it's a lot of time has passed since then, you know, and there's no, you know, just like go like that to from stage fright to where you are now, but can you like highlight some, I don't know, some aha moments or like what, I don't know if it was just, you know, reading books and practicing or how did you get closer to being more comfortable? You know,
It's a combo move, for sure. One of the things I realized was I did everything wrong. Right. I was anxious, not excited. So like, which actually changes your biochemical makeup. So first thing I did was I kind of like studied, what the hell did my body just do? Why did I go into fight or flight? And why would my body go into fight or flight talking to people? What evolutionary thing is that that's going to be so good for me? And the truth is, like, it's great for, as a societal animal, not to have everybody ready to go ahead and take the stage and talk, you know? We, inherently actually respect the stage and the power of it and the passing of the microphone. There's a reason why MCs will sort of like almost like pass a baton and shake someone's hand as an authority pass to the next person who's coming up and talking. There's a certain programming that we all follow when we're looking at these things. And, you know, when I was kind of like analyzing this, I could see how wrong I was. I could see all this stuff. And like when I was anxious, my body was releasing all this cortisol in my blood system. And it was just more and more cortisol. It was causing me to get more and more fight or flight. Neither of those will let you give a talk. I can't go in the front row and punch the first person I see, and I can't run out of the room. So I froze. You know, I couldn't do either the fight or the flight. And so what I was missing was oxytocin, you know, which is actually what you have. That's the difference between a person who's about to go on a ride and be excited about going on a ride. You're standing in line and you're kind of jumping up and down and you're like, yeah. And so you don't have anxiety. Because cortisol is dripping through your bloodstream, telling you, pay attention to this, pay attention to that, be afraid of this, be afraid of that. And without oxytocin, combined with that, your blood vessels all shrink up and it just creates this hyper tunnel vision of what's going on. And that oxytocin helps relax you and also make sure you're paying attention to the right things. And so I wasn't leaning into that. I wasn't leaning into all these things. And when I found out sort of what the biochemical and what my body was doing, I found out like, hey, now with practice, you can figure out how to get your oxytocin released, prepare for a talk, get these things happening. And then I went to my local Toastmasters and I was nervous as hell. And what they did is let me talk as much as I was comfortable talking. It was just like me saying my name and sitting back down. That's all I had to do. But I could always like do a little bit more. And then so that let me sort of like carve through the stone a little bit. And I want to say just, you know, half a year of Toastmasters is probably the most valuable thing I can recommend to anybody.
Can you share what Toastmasters is, just generally?
Yeah, absolutely. Toastmasters was formed at the YMCA back in like 19 whatever.
It's 98 years old.
Yeah, it's this ridiculously old organization. It's a fantastic organization where it was just the only way that you can learn a lot about public speaking, but then you got to do it. It's like you could learn how you know, a gun works, but people still have to go to the gun range. You could learn a lot about swimming, but you still have to go swim. You have to go do the thing. And so how do you do public speaking? You know, like you're going to sit in front of a mirror and practice it. Now you need a bunch of people who agree that they'll listen to you and you'll listen to them and you'll give each other feedback in a safe space. And that's what Toastmasters really is. It has three pillars. One of sort of this public speaking, another one of this evaluation, and then this third part that ties them together, which is like this leadership initiative. So if you want to get better at giving people feedback, speaking, or leading, that's the place. And so it's cheap as hell, man. These people haven't raised their prices since forever. And it's international. So people who are listening to this, like there's a Toastmasters quite a few in Amsterdam, you know, all kinds of these other places. So, and they have like the speaking competitions and fun stuff to go watch and cool people to go see and motivational stuff. So if you get yourself mixed up in there for a little bit and you kind of learn what your body was doing, the inevitable conclusion is that you will sort of solve your own sort of quandary that you can't solve, you know, just by being the first time you're speaking in front of a class for a grade, you know, like what a terrible first experience. And way better than that is a group of friendly people who have worked with 100 people just like you, who had the same concerns that you had and give you the amount of feedback that you're ready to receive, because I've learned some pretty advanced tricks, but I didn't learn those my first year at Toastmasters. Hell no. I was just learning how to go ahead and get up there without having to down a whole bottle of wine ahead of time or something.
They do have oxytocin nose spray, so maybe that's the answer. Oh,
well, see, there you go. Well, even easier than that is, like, if you... So I'll say this, like, when you're about to lift weights, you can do all kinds of crazy stuff, but you can actually, like, get yourself in the right mindset to lift weights. If you're about to go for a run, you could get yourself in the right mindset to go for a run. And if you're about to give a talk, you can get yourself in the right mindset to give a talk. It's just the same thing as all those other things. So I would always go for the internal skill versus running out of nose spray at the right time or whatever else happens. But yeah, it is good that we're kind of like chemically biohacking ourselves. But I think that starts with what we eat, think, and do.
I think that's such great advice, and that goes across so many different boards, you know, whether mm-hmm. you're coding or, you know, we talk about interviewing a yeah. lot at Virtual Coffee, and you go into an interview. I always like to, like, I'll watch a comedy show or yes. some funny clips beforehand, because I do that, you know, get that fight or flight, and it's so intense that unless I mm-hmm. can bring that down, mm-hmm. It's really hard for me to get back to a place where I can answer something confidently or present right. in a positive way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The fight or flight is it is awkward for us as an evolved societal species. You know, it's fantastic if somebody breaks into your house, but almost day to day, it's such a great skill for you to kind of manage that that discomfort and be able to work on it a bit. So I'd say, like, it's kind of a life skill. It's opened up a lot of I'll say Toastmasters has opened up a lot of doors for me, and I can never stop singing their praises for honestly what they've done. I can have a hard conversation with someone. You know, that was something I couldn't do either. I could do it anytime I need to now. I could do.
Can I call you instead of me doing it? I'll just let you do the hard conversations yeah, for
fired.
Me.
You're done. I just record me. You're fired.
Well, can you use one of the zombie tones for that too? Like,
yeah. I have to pull up all of the weird stuff I have.
I have a good voice modifier for you're fired.
Fired. I guess let me go ahead and find one for you, and I'll come back to that. They changed their icons on me for the voice mod stuff, and now I don't know what anything does.
Mm-hmm. No. Just try out.
I only want time. Yeah, I didn't feel like that's, try. Just that's time to
randomly, like, you're fired. I have no idea what I sound like. Is that the right voice?
That's it. Yep, that's it. We found it.
Perfect.
We found it. That's interesting. That's really interesting, though. The how all this stuff kind of relates, though, and the the fight or flight, and the way that your body, the reasons behind why your body's doing things, you know, or your mind is reacting to things. Mm-hmm. I feel like that aspect of it is really important to learn, and not just for obviously for public speaking. I've been doing a lot of that with with anxiety stuff too, and it's all sort of part of the same puzzle, you know. I don't know. I think that's very interesting that it's like that was one of your like starting, you know, like one of your starting points for all of this. It's cool.
It's about so we have a saying. I'm gonna Toastmaster y'all real quick with a saying. We don't get rid of the butterflies in your stomach. You make them fly in formation. And it's about riding your energy levels. Like, for instance, I am naturally a little bit anxious with that is what I realized, which makes me excited when I go places. So I'm about to give a talk. Before I'm on there, I feel like I'm about to get on a cool ride. And then when I get off of it, I feel like I was on a cool ride. If you're normally a bored person, you can be a relaxed person. You know, if you're stubborn, then you could be committed. It's not about changing who you are. It's about changing the outcome and what that ride is. And you could apply this to all these different things. Like, I'm not going to change my biochemical makeup much more than a little bit, but that's enough. You know, you can significantly alter the outcome with some well-placed chess pieces along your way and make yourself, you know, say like you... So you get on stage and you're just way too hyper. Well, I mean, if you present that as energetic, I mean, that's fantastic. I mean, that's what you want when someone's running your spin class. You know, like, people are paying a ton for the most energetic spin class, you know, like, videos that are out there. And people find that niche and they kind of ride it. That's how you turn it into success.
I find for me, it's much easier to do in front of a live audience. So, you know, being virtual and giving talks that way, it's been much harder because I can burn that nervous energy in front of a crowd of people. But when I'm looking at myself on the screen giving a talk, there's nowhere to put it.
Yeah. And there's another piece of this. I'll say that when I was here's something I noticed. I was able, fortunately enough, before the pandemic to give enough talks to believe the audience is on my side and wants me to succeed. They are super awesome. One time we had a technical glitch and I jumped on stage to go ahead and save the technical glitch because the audience would. I knew they would support me. I knew they would. They wanted someone to come out there and make a joke about the technical glitch, right? And it's great. But now anybody getting into speaking in a virtual world has no reinforcement on what their audience really wants and what they're really feeling. And they don't see heads nodding in the front row or whatever it is. And they're not looking for the positivity. And it's hard to find. So I couldn't imagine what it's like to start breaking into that during the pandemic and start actually having this where you don't get any kind of reinforcement as a speaker. And the second thing that's really awkward about that is I think audiences really need to step up. If someone does a tweet that you like, don't just heart it. Say, I love this tweet. Thank you so much. If someone does a podcast you like, you need to go find them afterward. You need to say something. It's so much more important in this virtual world. Because it's just like, I know somebody who did a blog post and they're like, nobody cared about this blog post. And I was like, well, what's the stats on it? And there was thousands of people who had read the blog post. I was like, here's thousands of people whose life you've influenced. And like, well, how come no one left a comment? I was like, well, welcome to the virtual world of lurking where you're going to get one comment per 10,000 people who care.
That's a really good
and point. That's a little bit weird. We're not programmed for that either. So this is the next battle.
Yeah, that is so hard to try and work through that. And you're especially when you're writing a blog post or a tweet, like you said, or you know, you're releasing your second book here soon. And it's like you put all of this time and effort and heart into creating these things. And then when there's no feedback, it can be challenging and cause self-doubt or imposter syndrome or whatever, because you've sunk a lot of yourself into it.
Yeah. It's you put yourself out into the void and it feels like nothing heard you. Nothing said it. You know, I feel very okay. I know that someone listening to this podcast has gotten some kind of value out of it. And that makes me extremely happy. I know that, by the way, you know, y'all get a lot more likes on your tweets than I do. I got to work on my tweeting structure to have it more conversational because I just tend to tell people stuff. It's too like redux, you know, it's just like unidirectional process here. So I need to work on that a bit. I know being here is perfect.
My most liked tweets are about my kids and poop. So, you know, can start there.
I can. Okay, you got it. I will.
See how that goes.
Wow. Here we go.
It's like as just millions of poop stories. I feel like
I'm tempting fate as well. I just hung an oil painting in my living room, and you see a photo of my living room, it is for my daughter. She has a slide and a this and a that and these cushions that I apparently had to buy because they're basically like mattresses, like memory foam mattresses that fold out, but they named it for kids. So now it's more expensive and I had to get those. And I've got all this stuff all over the place. And then you just see this oil painting against the wall. And I'm like, I'm going to defend it. I mean, it's not going to last. I know it's going to get destroyed, but I'm trying.
Yeah. We had, we had an old TV in our family room with the same deal aside, all that we moved the couches all over the place and stuff. And I was always joking about, like, if you're going to throw things at the wall, just aim it at this TV so that we can get a new one, you know? But then we got a new one, and now I'm like, okay, do not aim at this TV. I'm lost. I have the fear in me now. But so far, everything's fine.
That's good. Oh, man. All right. Kids and poop.
Yep.
Yeah.
Done. I'm writing it right here. It's on my desk.
In your Gantt way of writing things, you have to find... Yeah. Find the right way to do it, I guess.
Perfect.
So one of, like, kind of going back to what we were talking about before, you have a really distinct voice in all of the stuff that you do. And it's nice because it's really consistent. Like, if I opened up an article, I don't need to read that it's by Gantt Laborde, because I read it and I'm like, this is definitely a Gantt article, right? And so you're, like, covering it in all these spaces. So, like, how have you managed to stay, like, consistent across all of these things?
Here's something funny. I wrote a blog post really late at night, and I asked a few friends to review it, and their feedback was, this isn't Gantt enough. You failed. I was like, I don't want to rewrite. So, like, I went back in there. I was like, oh, I see what they're saying. Then I kind of re-added stuff to it. And I was like, here you go. Can you review this? And they're like, yeah, there you are. Which is really funny. I'd say that for me, it's a little bit of the authenticity of myself here. And I don't think that I'm a great story sometimes. I think that might be everybody's case, right? I know my story. I've been watching it for 40 years. So unfortunately, I'm a little bit like, I'll be able to do my voice anytime, and I'll be able to do my version of something anytime. I don't know if it always is going to resonate with people or if it's going to be that. But for the most part, I need to get over that, and I need to do it more. So I'd say that if you were... turning yourself into a brand, or if you're working on your own brand, be as authentic as you can. And I think that's what's so great about the fact that your kids and poop stories are doing so well on Twitter. Because if you were trying to do something else, I think everybody would notice, like, that goes away. And you got to find what you're really, really, really excited about and bring that to the forefront. And then you will always speak in your voice. So when I am talking to people, I'm very excited about the people I'm talking to. And I really want to get my story across. And I want to make it, like, fun and entertaining. And this is the same thing if we saw each other at a conference and we had to talk about what's your top three movies, right? Then I'm going to talk about that the same exact way, because that's who I am. And if we go out to dinner and have drinks and everybody's like, anybody come visit New Orleans once the world opens up, let's do that. Like, let's go all have drinks and sit out there and listen to some jazz and talk about whatever it is. But I'm going to sound exactly the same. And then that gives me the easiest way to keep my voice consistent. Now, I can raise that bar by improving who I am. So this is like that same thing I was talking about before, where you've not destroying your energy, but you're channeling it and you're kind of improving it and you're working on it. You're letting it flow in a different way. So if I, go start taking music lessons, or if I start learning how to speak with this crazy new dialect, or if I start doing Shakespeare in my spare time, those things are going to pepper into who I am and what's going to start happening there. And then the bar raises in everything that I do. So I found that, like, virtual coffee is a lot about virtual improvement as well, like improving yourself. You have book clubs, you have finding your voice here, you have mentorship and things like that. Those are all perfect. And as long as they're actually coming in and hitting home and being who they are. I know people who tried to open up like Twitter accounts to be a personality. They did great for 3 months and then they just couldn't keep it going. This is the formula for consistency. Be 100% you.
That's really great advice. I like that. I think for me, so normally when I'm writing, it's just more, it's personal, it's storytelling. And that's where I feel comfortable. And so I've tried to write more technical things and it's much harder because it's like this negotiation of like, well, I need to appear to be an authority or something. Like, I'm not an authority on this stuff. It's like figuring out how to find that balance of like, okay, just like be myself, but also be myself and talk about code, you know?
Yeah. Well, and the authority, here's a weird thing. The authority doesn't have to say they're an authority or doesn't have to talk like an authority to be an authority for a certain time, especially in our field. So we're used to authority coming from like a uniform and a particular mentality and things like that. But that's just the first, you know, reaction that we have. And then after that, an authority doesn't have to say they're an authority. Mm-hmm. That's a sign of it. And so my last blog post for the Google Developer Experts that was published has Harry Potter themed cartoons and terrible drawings in it and a secret Easter egg that if you draw a skull on the website, it'll like show these snakes that come out and call you a Death Eater. It's like a fun little thing. And what happens is none of that is professional. But I think that what's great about it is that, sure, we set up a little bit of the professionalism and why this is on that blog post and what the categories are and what the technology that's going to be used are. And then the trick is not to sit there and constantly say, I'm still an authority. Let your story be told and let people be able to leave that because they're already following you now. You have the stage. You don't have to keep mentioning you're on stage and you're talking into a microphone. You have the attention. Now keep it. That's the trick. If you were to bring out the most boring person on stage, I could give them an introduction and hand them a microphone and everybody would start listening. And that would be my job as an MC or as the person who brought them on. But 5 minutes later, if they're not listening, that's not my fault. That's the story that they're telling. That's what's going on. So you can start with authority, but don't stay in it. It's not really as cool as it sounds. And I would say that's there's enough people ready to hand you a microphone that you don't have to worry about improving your authority. You just have to be willing to go ahead and accept more microphones in your life.
I like that. Yeah. One thing that I have worked on with this sort of thing too is like if you're writing about a topic, you know, you don't have to, it's okay that you don't know everything, you know, and also like your readers or audience or whatever will maybe trust you more if you are upfront about like, well, I'm not really sure about this part, but here's what, how I solved it or, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I found personally, like, it's a struggle to get through sometimes because you want it, like you, I don't know. My lizard brain wants people to, you know, think that I know everything or whatever, you know? Like working on that, like little step of, I really don't know everything. Here's how I solve this problem, whatever, you know? And like being like, I feel like when I'm reading as an audience member, when I'm listening or reading that sort of thing actually helps me trust somebody, you know, more than if they don't mention it or act like, you know, in some way that they, you know, pretend that they know everything because nobody does, you know? So
no one actually wants perfection, man. It really doesn't. You know, the PhD presentations like you're talking about where nobody can be wrong. You can't go up on the curb. You can't, you know, you have to have driven most effectively. I mean, how many PhD presentations can you go to a conference and watch? Like, it's terrible. And if you ask, and we could do this experiment right now. Think right now about the best talk that you've ever seen in person. The one that was like, wow, that was really, really good. Just choose one of the really good ones. And I want you to name three properties of that talk. Okay. So like three adjectives that describe that talk. And we'll start with you, Becca.
It was engaging. No, that's not an adjective.
Mm-hmm. Is it? No, perfect. Perfect. Yeah, engaging.
Something the entire audience could relate to at different stages. So I guess relatability, maybe.
Okay. Yeah.
And then it was fun.
Yeah, perfect. And we'll get three more.
Yeah. So I was also struggling with a word choice, but it was like not all the way polished. I don't know. What's the right word for that?
Yeah.
Perfect. The story was personal. I mean, it was a tech talk ostensibly, but the mm-hmm. story behind it was like personal. So like, you know, relatable, like kind of like Becca was saying. And I had a third thing, but I forget exactly what it was. I don't know. My mind is empty now.
But that's okay. Neither of y'all said perfect.
Yes.
No one says perfect. And that's what we can give it. What was it? Relatable. It was someone coming and feeling like they're making eye contact with you and leading you through something fun and relatable. That's it. Congratulations. Like, that's it. Nothing you do should be perfect. No one cares about the perfect speech that they saw. That person failed. The relatable speech is the one that was everybody's favorite. Ta-da. Now the bar is a lot easier. I think we can reach telling a story and having people be happy that they heard it.
Yeah. I love that. So I mean, I love that way of thinking about the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I gave my first talk at a conference, it was when I was a graduate student in English. And mm-hmm. it's a very different feel because it is, you have to yeah. be perfect and there will be that person in the audience who will raise their hand and try and stump you or to make you feel like you don't really know what you're talking about. It's like yes. trying to unlearn that anxiety that first experience caused.
I had that. So I did a keynote for Amazon. It was one of my favorite talks I ever gave. It was amazing. It was great. And we had Q&A afterward, and there were so many cool Q&A. And then there was that one person, you know, who stands up and starts telling their life story. Like, okay, you've got the microphone and now it's your turn. Okay, go ahead. They do all this stuff. Then they ask the most esoteric question. And it was like this really crazy thing and this and that. And they just wanted to sound super impressive. And I knew everybody, I could say something and we could have this conversation and be like done. Cause like no one else who was there was following what they were saying. And I was half following it. And if I just kind of conceded to them, they would have been like, aha, you know, I know so much. And then they would have maybe sat down or something. The way I handled it is because I saw it happen. I was like, this person's not supposed to be here. That's not the, you know, this, you're at the wrong kind of talk. So I told them, I said, Google it. I said, go Google it. And they were visually shocked that I said that. And I actually enjoyed that way more.
That's the let me Google that for you approach.
Yeah. I guess they didn't expect that to come. You know, there's always those people, and truth is, you don't need to waste time on that.
Yeah, it's totally true. Just need my brain to remember that. I really have enjoyed this interview. Mm-hmm. I think that you just do such a good job of like mentoring in every situation, and you know. Have you always been that way? Like,
nope.
Is that a skill you develop?
I honestly say I learned a lot of how. So I won Best Evaluator in some Toastmasters competitions. I learned how to evaluate and give constructive feedback there. Like I said, there's three pillars to it. And I really do owe my speaking ability, my ability to give feedback and a lot of my leadership skills, I really do owe to the fact that I've been area governor at Toastmasters for a year. I've been a club mentor. I've spoken in competitions as well at a club level like hundreds of times now. And I've been an evaluator hundreds of times. It's just these are the things that I've been allowed to practice. And anybody who goes and practices these things is going to find that they've built a muscle that they can use in all kinds of life situations.
That's so great. And I think that you've hit on this idea a couple of times of it's practice, right? You know, it might seem effortless that you see somebody doing something, but it's because they have practiced these things over and over, and it takes growth and it takes time and effort. But
yeah, always be growing. Always be growing. What book are you reading that's challenging you? What, you know, blog post are you writing that's challenging you? What's the next thing? If you're not, I mean, I know this is like the oldest and everybody hates hearing it, but if you're not growing, you're dying. Mm. And I really do believe that it's important for you to be, you know, we've got so much time with a very, very sharp intellect, and we tend to waste that, you know, for our first 28 years of our life. Some people really kind of get there. But for the rest of the time, you're sort of like crystallizing new thoughts and ideas and bringing those in. And I love that because, you know, you could do that till, you know, the day you die. You can always be getting these new thoughts and kind of adding new skills and getting new updates and improving who you are. And it's a little bit like if I add a new word a day or a new word a week, you know. I've got 52 amazing, cool new ways to express myself a year. If I add new concepts, I'm finding new ways to express myself, and I'm getting new nouns and new neurons that I can hold ideas in that normally I was unable to hold before. So I'm a relentless self-improver. I buy books, and then sometimes they can be just brought down to one paragraph. You know, I know this. You read the whole book and you're like, it was one paragraph. Just say this and then ignore the book. But I'll still, you know, that one paragraph of perfectly usable, well-identified information is locked in your brain forever because you read that whole book. And you'll be able to reference it and use it for the rest of your life. So I think that it is practice. And one of the most beautiful things we can do is constantly improve.
One question was, like, how do you personally manage like the learning along with obviously doing work? And you seem to be doing, you know, like mixing in your side projects and everything else that you have going on, plus, you know, family and all of that stuff. Do you have any specific method or anything?
For me, I combo things as much as possible. And some people absolutely love it. And some people, there are certain situations where it's like, no, you don't combo this. Right. You wouldn't go to a recital and then like check your emails, right? Bad combo. But if you've got to learn a new technology and you've got like a marketing task and you have a cool idea that you want to work on, well, if you build that new idea into that new technology, yeah, it might take you three times as long. But you're kind of like building your resume, or you're kind of adding a marketing concept. And so you kind of combo these things, and then you want to get as much out of those as possible. As a developer, I tend to not. So for instance, I'll mention like, so I just wrote a book, right? My intuition is to shut the hell up and have said that once. I said I wrote a book. I put I pinned the tweet. Didn't I do like all the marketing, right? That's your intuition. That's my intuition. That's how we can just, the truth is I have to force like other things I have to constantly like, you know, fit those things. So here, take a look at this. I'm on this amazing podcast. I'm interested, you know, I'm going to talk about all these cool concepts. And then boom, guess what? I'm opening my spreadsheet of marketing drips and I'm saying, mention the book. Boom, combo move. And so there's kind of stuff there. I think finding proper combinations of things is going to give you what is like attractive to go after as well. It's like this serves like all these different kinds of things. That's what I always loved about computers. Like you could leave them running and they're always crunching numbers and collecting emails and solving problems in the background. Back, I want to say a billion and a half years ago, I might be off by a little bit, there was this screensaver that used to like try to help identify radio signals in space. Remember SETI? And so one of the things is like your computer, when it went dormant, used to like try to help identify signals in space. I loved that, you know, like when I'm not using it, it's working on this cool thing. This is, of course, before crypto, because who has an extra GPU cycle now? We'd come up with that idea then and just like, all right, everybody's going to mine crypto for us now. I mean, now they're shoving it into JavaScript, so it's doing in the background of web pages, right? Yeah. But I think it's about finding situations, partnerships, interactions where you can have a lot of the things that you want all kind of come together, and making sure that you're pushing yourself to get all the juice out of every single piece of fruit. You get better at squeezing it out. You get better at using every piece of it. You become a chef, you know, of, okay, I'm going to cut this part over here, but these skins are going to go over there and be flavoring for that. I'm going to leave this in the pan for this. And like this weird sort of combination in this 3D math starts to come out. That's when you know you're getting more value out of your time. And I think that's what we really worry about, because I could spend a lot of time doing something that has low value. And then if I could do something that does a whole bunch of things for me, that's a high value thing. And those aren't easy to figure out. And I think they're very per person. But that's my favorite thing. If I can find something that hits a bunch of different plus signs, I'm like, yes, I deserve this dopamine.
That's awesome. I like that. I like the sort of intentional, you know, approach mm-hmm. to that sort of thing. Cause I'm always have a billion different things going on, you know, and trying to like review and figure out how to pull them all together, you know, into some different, you know, overlap some different circles or whatever. I think that's a great approach.
We're Venn diagramming. Yeah. I guess it's like it's the Venn diagram of life here. Like, what things can I do to have the most impact in my? And here's a trick: learn to say no to the things that don't. So you have all these things that Venn diagram. You have 5 to 10 things on this list that are huge impact. The 10 things underneath that are evil, attractive things that you want to do that are low impact things that don't move the needle, that don't do anything. And you have to cut those. Those are your do not do list. And the top is your do list. And you say no to the things that go that serve the bottom. You say yes to the things that serve the top.
I like that. Got to figure out how to say no to. Yeah. That's a not quick easy. Different question.
Yeah.
It's a whole other indeed. Podcast episode, I suppose.
saying no, the episode.
We do. We need that episode, I think. You and I met one time and you said, one of the things you said to me was, when you say yes to something, you're saying no to 100 other things or something like that. And I was like,
Uh-oh. Oh, damn. Yeah.
Yeah. It's true, though. Oh, I think we're pretty much there, right? Mm-hmm. Are you right?
Yes, I was thinking through all Echoes of these things now.
And Becca Land.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. There's there was this artist who went on stage and he played. And then after he played, no one applauded. and so he felt really bad. And then the person said their still emotionally feeling what happened there. So it's okay. So I was like, whenever I say something and there's like silence afterward, that's what I tell myself. I'm like, hey, people are thinking about what you just said. That's okay.
Yeah.
versus, you know, you have this inner cynic that I've fortunately been able to kill, or like subdue, which is the one who's like, hey, no one said anything. What did you do? Why is there silence? You know, there's certain people who have to fill silence. That cynic's winning for them. If you can have a pleasant pause in the conversation, those are people who you are actually talking to, and that's a friendly conversation.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that. This happens to me in our podcast recordings mm-hmm. often, right? Where somebody will say something like meaningful, or will just like start, you know, my brain will start going on that. But then mm-hmm, also mm-hmm. need to like host the podcast, you know. It's, so the exact same exact thing happens where there's just silence because I'm just like, we're both just like, whoa, you know, just like thinking.
Yeah.
But then we, you know, have to remember like, oh, right, we're like podcast hosts.
Like, wait, is this thing on? Where am I? I know that definitely happens, yeah. You know, and I think there are lots of signs that I've picked up that, you know, like in this conversation, we're not afraid to go down a path. And that just makes it such a friendly conversation. You know, if you had like a rigid agenda and then like, it was like, we go to this point, you're like, oh man, when somebody's listening to this podcast, it's going to feel forced or that. Y'all don't do that. I really appreciate it. It's like, you know, if I had started talking about Dwayne Johnson for 15 minutes after the zombie apocalypse conversation, I think y'all would have let me, and I appreciate that a lot.
Yeah, no, we almost went down that road. I was close, and then I think Becca started moving on, so it's probably good, but...
Well, that's good. We The Rock, the podcast.
I love tangents. Tangents are my favorite.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, indeed.
Okay. Well, I think this has been a really great episode. We covered a lot of stuff that was really important and really meaningful. And now everybody gets to have a glimpse of what it's like to have you as their personal Yoda. So
I appreciate that.
Thank you so much for being here with us. We will drop all of your links in the show notes, but is there anything else that you're working on that you would like to plug right now?
I'll just say that I really am lucky enough to work at a company, Infinite Red, where we really have a huge footprint, and I'm really excited because we work in the React Native space, so we build mobile apps and stuff like that. And I work with a lot of other Yodas there. A lot of really friendly people who could easily go off to work for Microsoft, Google, Facebook. Like, they could go to a Fortune 500 tomorrow. And I think that I'm in a place in my life where I get to choose my company and who I'm around. And I'm around other people who do the same thing, and they kind of choose us. So we're a real fun company for explaining stuff, working with stuff, and building technology. And I'll say that, like, I appreciate them for supporting me on going on podcasts, as well as like how cool it is to kind of come in and work for us as well. We have a careers application for people that we don't usually push too much now, but we're at the point where we have to grow. So it's at careers.infinite.red. So if you want to work with us, feel free to apply there. Currently only hiring US and Canada. We're being extra picky. And then also, if you want to work with us in a consulting standpoint, just hello@infinite.red, and we'll send somebody your way immediately. Start talking about your app, and you'll get to meet our CTO and our CEO. And, like, you know, we don't even have salespeople.
That's awesome.
Just a group of people having fun and building great stuff.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, Infinite Red. Great. Well, very cool. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt. I've been an admirer of Infinite Red for a long time. So,
High five.
Yeah, same.
Got it.
Yeah.
And I've met 2 out of 3 of the owners. So still waiting for that third.
Yeah, you got to meet Todd. He is a bundle of fun. He focuses internally constantly. We call him our internal glue. He is first to comment on something. The person anybody goes to if they like they feel like they need to talk to somebody, because he's, you know, like, I guess you could talk to me if you're talking about career stuff and things like that. Todd knows what everybody did this weekend. He knows what everybody did this weekend, and he's going to show you what he did, you know, and to have that as a CEO is like great for trying to be like a humanizing sort of company. We care a lot about what's going on in people. Well, not what's going on in your life, but like how you're doing, you know, and how we are part of like what's going on there. And I know that people are super anti saying like we're a family kind of thing. We're not a family, but we sure treat you as a human being and as like a friend, and we help you with things. So like Todd, if you meet him, he's gonna attach and just like find out like what you're doing this weekend and stuff like that. He's super cool. So we try to reserve his energies to internal, but you could definitely reach out and talk to him. He's super cool.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being here and for always supporting Virtual Coffee, because you do so much, whether it's mentoring or coming to coffee and talking or giving a million brown bags on things that we need to hear. We very much appreciate it. And I'm glad to have you on the podcast too.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Virtual Coffee Podcast. This episode was produced by Dan Ott and Becca Harrott-Weigel and edited by Dan Ott. If you have questions or comments, you can hit us up on Twitter at virtualcoffee.io, or you can email us at podcast@virtualcoffee.io. You can find the show notes, plus you can sign up for our newsletter to find out what Virtual Coffee's been up to on our website at virtualcoffee.io.
Please subscribe to our podcast and be sure to leave us a review. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.